I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter. This week, my guest is Aisha Hazarika, comedian, journalist, broadcaster, former powderer of Ed Miliband's nose. That sounds weird. That's I mean that in a very much in a makeup sense. And just all-round living legend. Hello, Aisha. How are you doing?
Hello, Harriet. It's lovely to be chatting to you during lockdown.
I know. Where are you at the moment? Are you in London or...?
Yes, I'm sat in my basement flat in Camden Town, hiding away from the world. I feel like I'm in a prison, but I feel I've got Stockholm syndrome. I don't want to be here, yet I can never leave at the same time.
I have definitely had some sort of lockdown Stockholm syndrome. A few weeks ago, I was like, I'm desperate to get out, but also I don't want to go on any form of public transport or see anyone else.
But it's such a paradox, isn't it? Because, like, on the one hand, we're, like, so desperate for freedom. But the other hand, we're, like, quite scared because there was full FOMO and fear of missing out. Now I think there's full goal, fear of going out, which is, like, you know, as much as I say, oh, I'd love to go to the pub, I think I'll be terrified to be squashed up, you know, with lots of other people again. Like, I'm really scared about getting on the tube again or going to, like, a really busy pub or a gig or something like that. So you can't win, really.
I think the one good thing that's come out of this is, as a short person, I'm very excited to never again be wedged into somebody's armpit, either on a crowded tube or in a crowded bar. Social distancing means that I will never again smell a stranger's sweat. We got you on the show today because we wanted to talk. We've been doing some series of lockdown specials where we look at some of the key topics that have come up since this period of coronavirus. I do wonder what we're going to call this period, like, you know, when people are studying us in their history GCSE in 50 years time, what this period will be known as. But anyway, in this kind of global pandemic period, one of the topics that we're thinking about is sort of how invested we have all become in politics and also in the news cycle and what that is doing for our mental health and how we manage it. And I thought, I know a woman who knows everything about both politics and the news cycle. We'll get Aisha. So first of all, can you please give me an update as to what the F is going on with our parliament? Are people in it or are they at home?
Right. So I wish there was like easy answers to all these questions, which there should be, but everything is an effing mess right now. And Parliament, it has really, really lowered itself to the occasion. So we had the situation which actually did work pretty well, where they had a virtual Parliament. I mean, they allowed a very small number of MPs to come in for big events like Prime Minister's questions, but the chamber was very, very much reduced. But they had screens everywhere and they moved the majority of proceedings to a virtual Parliament. So select committee hearings were done via Zoom calls, just how businesses have been organised. Yeah. Even the House of Lords, which has got an average age of 730, they all got, you know, the hang of Zoom and were doing a lot of the sort of calls. And what was really interesting about that is that I was quite sceptical about how that would work, particularly for things like Prime Minister's questions or big select committee events, like something called the Liaison Committee or things like the Health Select Committee or the Home Affairs Select Committee. I was quite worried how that would all work, you know, in this kind of hybrid model. But it actually worked quite well. And I think what was interesting is during Prime Minister's Questions, a lot of people watching from home, because it was quite a big deal, Prime Minister's Questions, because of COVID and because Keir Starmer's new leader of the Labour Party, a lot of people actually said they found it more satisfying because it was quieter and you didn't have all the noise and the sort of rabble. And actually a lot of people felt that by taking the kind of the theatre down and the shouting and taking the temperature down, it felt like, you know, Parliament and these sessions were much more illuminating. But that has all changed now. And I think quite a lot of it was to do with the fact that the Prime Minister, call me a cynic, was not having a great time at Prime Minister's Questions against Keir Starmer, and was quite relying on having a bit of an audience sort of cheering him on. So the rules have been changed and they're quite sort of chaotic. So most parliamentarians are expected to come in. But as we know, there are many who find it very difficult. They themselves might be shielding. They might have a health condition. They might be caring for somebody who's got a health condition. Some people, there are disabled MPs like Robert Halfen who, you know, are shielding and, you know, will struggle to sort of get in. So it's all a bit of a mess, really. They've been allowed to contribute via, you know, Zoom or a kind of a virtually. But in terms of voting, it's just been, I think they're just getting a proxy vote now. But I think a lot of people think it's quite a missed opportunity to just not allow the virtual voting and the electronic voting to carry on. Because I think in a modern day parliament, it's not just COVID, but, you know, if you look at new mothers and fathers who we're trying to preach as a parliament to the rest of the workplace about flexible working, being a bit more tolerant or accommodating of people with caring responsibilities. Yet the message we're sending out is basically, well, if you're not fit enough and committed enough to be in Parliament, well, you're just not that serious an MP, you know. And that's, I think, a very damaging message at this point as we develop as a society to be sending out.
Do you think that there's going to be a backlash against this? Because potentially we could have a second wave of COVID-19. We could see more people getting ill. And if we have a parliament that said, no, if you're going to work for us, you've got to be sat here in parliament, that's quite a strong message, I guess, to businesses as well, to say it's okay to order your employees into the office regardless of their health.
Absolutely, Harriet. I mean, you've just hit the nail on the head. I think it's the sort of, you know, do as we say, not as we do, because the message, I think rightly, from the Prime Minister is if you can work from home, you should do. And that is a really important message to get out to businesses, because the real worry is that we've put in all this hard work and the R number has thankfully gone down, although not in all parts of the country. In the Northwest, it's still pretty high and it's kind of going up. So we're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. So the worry is, you know, businesses and everybody looks at what the government is doing and goes, all right, fine, well, we'll just order everybody back to work. And then, you know, we could be in a really difficult position. How do we get to work? Have to get on public transport? We'll all be bunched up together. We'll be back in our workplaces, which, let's be honest, even if you work in quite a big office, you're still really bunched up next to everybody. Yeah. We know that lots of people have to hot desk. You know, you are bunched up. Meeting rooms are very tight in modern businesses. You're all bunched up into small rooms, for airless rooms for meetings. So I think it does send out a bad signal from a health point of view, but also just from a progressive society and an economy point of view. I actually think a lot of businesses will have, if they're smart, they'll realise that you can do so much from home. I mean, whoever thought we could be sitting here, you know, you as a broadcaster will be doing all your broadcasting work from home. You know, I put my pages of a newspaper together from home. This stuff was thought impossible at once. I think a lot of businesses, if they're smart, will probably think, well, we'll save ourselves a lot of money and get rid of the office because you actually don't need it. This is what this pandemic has shown.
Isn't it funny how actually when we're given the option to return to what we know and is normal and safe, we just run straight back to it even when it's not what works best? That's what occurred to me there. Do you think our way of working in Parliament has become more collaborative, and can it stay like that? And what I mean by that is, certainly, you know, when Keir Starmer was first elected as leader of the Labour Party, he said very clearly, I'm not going to take the government on stuff that it doesn't need to be taken on. I'll hold it to account. I will push on the questions, but I'm not going to be, essentially said I'm not going to be difficult for the sake of being difficult. And it was much more collaborative. Do you think that is going to, I mean, not necessarily that should remain, obviously, you know, we have opposition parties for a reason, but that understanding that sometimes you get more done when you work together, do you think that will last?
No, I don't think it will. I'll just be really honest with you.
Ever hopeful.
Straight talking. So I think it was important and necessary at the beginning of this crisis, because I think it would have been the wrong thing for Keir Starmer and the Labour Party to have just kind of carried on the same sort of style that Jeremy Corbyn had adopted, which was just criticise everything, say that everything is absolutely sort of terrible. I just feel that that would not have been the right thing to do or the smart thing to do, and it's just not where the public were, because I think at that point, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was just so frightened. They weren't looking at this in terms of tribal lines or party politics. This was like a sort of not just a national emergency, it was a global emergency. So I think he took the right approach to begin with. But, and I think, I mean, I interviewed him for the London Evening Standard, and it was at a time when Matt Hancock was under a lot of pressure because he had said that he wanted to hit these targets of testing every day, but the targets were not yet being met. And I asked Keir Starmer, if Matt Hancock doesn't reach this target, which I think was that week, are you going to call for him to resign? And he actually said, no, I'm not going to call for him to resign, because, you know, I think the testing target is there for an important reason. I want him to meet the target, but it would be a bit immature and irresponsible to actually call for the head of the health secretary in the middle. So I think that was a really good example of being quite constructive. You know, the traditional thing would be, yes, like, you know, I'm going to call for his head. It's an absolute disgrace. Yeah. And I thought that's, and actually Keir Starmer got quite a lot of criticism from the left at that point, because they were like, oh, he's too soft on the government. How can you not be calling for Matt Hancock to go? But I think as the case and the body of evidence has mounted against the government's many failings, from being late into lockdown, lack of PPE, lack of testing, lack of thinking about care homes, and of course the huge number of excess deaths, I think there is now a charge sheet for him to legitimately critique the government on. And he's not just critiquing the government on behalf of himself as a Labour leader, he's doing it on behalf of the public, because I think the public want the government, look, we all want the government to succeed, our lives depend on it, our livelihoods depend on it, but there are a lot of questions that need to be asked, and if you don't ask those questions of leader of the opposition, you're not doing your job. So I do think the gloves have come off, and I'm afraid, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, let's take the politics out of this, but politics is now a matter of life and death. These political decisions are, the stakes are so high on them. So I think, I'm afraid, the time of Kumbaya has been and gone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast. You can get in touch on all the socials on at Badass Women's Hour.
One thing I really wanted to ask you about was this idea of keeping up with the news and keeping up with what's going on politically and in our government and with coronavirus. Because certainly when the whole thing started, I think everyone was there, glued to the daily briefings. Instantly, overnight, pretty much everyone I knew became an absolute expert in infectious disease. And, you know, we were all sort of suddenly deeply, deeply interested in bar graphs, which nobody had been up until that point. And then after a while, it almost got too much. And I definitely had a point where I had to be like, I can't watch the daily briefing for a little bit. I was like, I need a few days where I just don't watch it, where I don't know what's going on. And this is my world. You know, I'm used to having to keep up with what's going on in the news. I'm used to having to digest it all the time. And I just got to a point where I said, I have to put it down. How do you manage that?
It is hard. And like you, it's my job. You know, I'm a journalist, I'm a news hound, I have to keep on top of things. I'm often on the radio very early in the morning commentating on overnight news. I work on a daily paper, so we have our morning conference very early, and then, you know, we're sort of, you know, we're on conference calls from like 7 in the morning. So, you know, I do have to be across the news. I do broadcasting very late at night on Sky papers and things like that. So it's my job to be, you know, on the news pretty much most of all my waking hours. And I love the news. I'm a news addict. But even I found it really overwhelming at times, and just, you know, that point where your brain is really, really wired. And I think we all have to really find a way of looking after our mental health at the moment as well, because we're all trapped in our houses. We are interested in what's happening in the news, of course we are, but the news is incredibly upsetting at the moment, whether it's the, you know, stories about how many people have died with coronavirus, whether it's the stories of this, you know, horrific mother of all recessions coming down the track, and the figures on what projected unemployment might be. And of course, just this weekend, we've had huge explosion, you know, on race inequality, Black Lives Matter. I mean, we're actually at the stage where we've watched a man die on our camera, you know, on our phones, on our screens, and all of this stuff does take its toll on you. And added on top of that is the very, very aggressive nature of Twitter, particularly, which is all about attacking people, very explosive views, a lot of, you know, difficult things to handle if you're a woman or a person of color. There's a lot of, you know, it's hyper aggressive. And this all makes like a kind of a perfect storm for all becoming quite overwhelming. I mean, I sometimes do worry about how much time I'm glued to the news, and particularly Twitter. I mean, I'd love to say to you that I've worked out a kind of Gwyneth Paltrow way of looking at, I mean, you know, when you get that pop up from your screen time, and it's literally like, Aisha, your screen time is 36 hours a day on Twitter. It's like, ah! But it's very difficult. I mean, one of the things that I do try to do now is I've changed my kind of settings on Twitter. So I don't see messages from people, I think, who don't follow me or don't have verified accounts. That's cut down on a lot of the abuse that I see, and a lot of the, quite honestly, quite a lot of the misogynistic, quite violent, quite racist abuse that I used to get, which would be quite difficult. You know, I obviously would find that quite sort of difficult. I'm trying to now give myself a few more breaks. And, you know, sometimes you just have to physically put your phone out of sight for like an hour or something like that, if you're going to sit down and watch something which is a complete distraction on Netflix or something like that, don't do looking at two screens at one time. You know, try and put your phone away and just give your brain a break for an hour, even if you're watching something mindless on Twitter. But I think it's really hard, and I think it's something that I think lots of people, even I think the general public, are suffering from it, and I think even seasoned journalists are suffering from it as well.
Do you think there is something to be said for us not necessarily taking a break, but actually saying it's okay to say I'm almost going on a virtual holiday this week. This week, even though I'm not leaving my house, I am pretending that I'm on holiday and I'm putting my phone down and I'm putting the news down and I'm not buying a paper and I'm just, although everyone should buy a paper because they're in trouble at the moment, but I'm taking a week off. Or are we going to fall behind?
It's a really good question. I think it's quite a paradox right now, isn't it? Because we're all working from home and we can't go anywhere. So taking a holiday or taking some time off feels like quite kind of contradictory. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think paradoxically, we're actually all working even more, even though we're at home, because we are switched on the whole time. And even though, and we have these extra hours in the day where we're not doing the commute. And I think a lot of people are filling that with work, particularly, you know, if you're in news where you are just kind of processing a lot of information. I think it is important to try and give yourself a bit of a break. But again, I'm just going to be really honest with you. Mm. I think it's really hard. I think a lot of us are now hardwired from the minute we get up in the morning to the minute we shut our eyes, because we're isolated at home, we feel that we're kind of connected through this black screen in the palm of our hand, even though it's a sort of fake connection in many ways. But there's a psychological sort of need to feel plugged into what's going on. I think a lot of people feel quite anxious if they even drop out for a couple of hours. And also the news cycle moves so fast these days. You know what it's like? You can sort of not be on Twitter or your phone for, like, I don't know, 4 hours, and then suddenly there's a whole new story that's blown up and you have to catch up on it. So it's again, I don't have an easy suggestion. I mean, one of the things I wanted to try and do myself was at nighttime, just to try and get off my phone a bit earlier before I go to bed, because I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people are having a lot of trouble winding down and going to sleep and
having strange dreams.
And just being like really wired and thinking about everything. And I think that's quite a sensible thing to do, but it is hard. I think being connected is both a blessing and a curse. Look, in many ways it is good, right? I don't want to be on these people who's just like, oh, phones are all terrible and tech's all terrible. We're all surviving because of tech. It's allowing us to be connected. And there's a lot of, as much as there's a lot of horrible stuff online, there's a lot of kinship as well, and sort of, you know, friendship in a way that gets a lot of people through the day, particularly if you're kind of living by yourself. But it is also, you know, as we've sort of said, it there's a lot of kind of downside to it. So I think what will be interesting is when we come out of this, and as you say, like down the track, when behavioral experts and social scientists look back, what will be the profound effect stroke damage on us as a result of all of this, and just being so kind of wired the whole time, and just so, like, all our socialization, all our news gathering, everything is just through screens and on our phones. It's going to be fascinating to see how that, the impact of that.
You're completely right. I mean so many impacts I think are going to be completely fascinating. I think it's going to be how we interact with people will completely change.
Do you think we'll be bad at interacting with people when we come out of this?
One of the things I think is going to be really interesting is the concept of face masks and how that is going to change our interaction. Because we think already how particularly in the UK, how terrible we are at dealing with anyone who wears, say, a facial covering, whether that's a veil or, you know, even I remember being on a train with a woman who just kind of had a scarf bound around her face and a hat on, and people were treating her almost weirdly. We're really uncomfortable when we can't see people's faces, and I think that plus our sort of this fear that we now have of people, where we're like, oh, can I hug you? No, I can't. What does that mean? Oh, I think that's going to really change actually our level of tolerance to people as well.
Yeah, especially because we're quite a tactile, because we went for a long time of being like, oh, we're not like the French, we don't kiss. And now we're like, we're all over people. Like, you know, we're big huggers now, aren't we? Like, that's a big thing.
You know, I hug everyone. And I really don't. I put kisses at the end of all my emails and that kind of stuff. And so suddenly it's like, oh no, we've gone back. We've stepped back into a very reserved place. And it's, I do say to everyone, though, that if you ever watch a terrible programme on TLC called 90 Day Fiancé, that is proof that people can fall in love without ever seeing, touching, or even being in the same continent as each other.
Ah.
So...
is that a bit like Love is Blind?
A little bit, yeah.
Is that a bit, oh my God, I loved Love is Blind so much. I loved it so much. I loved it so much. In fact, I was thinking about you. I was thinking, I need Harriet podcast to go with this.
I know, I was like, just need to talk about it. I love it. Finally, Madeleine, I won't take too much more of your time, but I just want to ask you, from a sort of political, governmental, how as a society we interact with politics way, what is one thing you think will have changed in a year's time because of COVID-19?
Well, I think what we're going to see is a public health crisis, which collides with this huge economic crisis. So I think in a year's time, things we could have just had a very, very difficult year of redundancies, people having a really, really tough time. So I'm quite worried about that. Now, what I hope is that this moment, this huge, profound experience that we've all been through together, provides a kind of teachable moment where we think, right, what are the things we should learn coming out of this? And I hope the positives that we learn are, you know, let's think about who we value in society and not constantly overlook people that are actually really valuable to us, who we very derogatorily called low skill, but actually they became our heroes and heroines during this, you know, our key workers, all of that sort of stuff. So I hope we all feel like we're a bit kinder now and we've got a bit better relations with our neighbours and we did the clap for carers. I hope we do see that through in terms of keeping pressure on the government in terms of how they handle this difficult economic period, and we don't just cut everything again and we don't just sort of punish people at the bottom who actually do really important work for us. That's what I really kind of hope happens. But I think politics is going to get ever more divisive because the stakes are going to be really, really high. I think we could be in for quite an angry time.
Yeah.
Because with so many people losing their jobs, or if not them, seeing their children or grandchildren, I think people are going to be quite angry and quite fearful. So I really hope, look, we're not going to have a general election for 4 years. We have Boris Johnson as our Prime Minister. I'm not his biggest fan, but I really, really hope for the sake of the country, he does sort of rise to the challenge, because I think being Prime Minister is hard anyway, but to be Prime Minister at a point where things are going to get so, so tough with the economy and with society, I really hope he does try and lead for everybody, because we do not want our country to fall apart. We don't want our country to become really, really frayed. That will just not help any of us, and that will not help our future prosperity or our future happiness as a country.
So basically, economic decline, levels of arguing at Brexit +++, and Boris Johnson. Aisha, that's a joyous note to leave us on. Thanks.
Jazz hands. But the good news is that maybe Love Island will come back. That's the only positive I've got for you. I'm so sorry.
Now. Aisha, it's so lovely to talk to you as ever. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom. You've been a joy. Thank you.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour, or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.